Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the Fiber Talk midweek version of that twice weekly podcast for needle people.
Started strong there.
I did. I had it and then I lost it. See, I was going to get creative. See, every time I get creative, that's what happens. So now I have needle people, which could be construed to be anything. Yeah. Oh, well. There you have it.
Let's just leave it. Let's just leave it and moving on.
Yes. Next week, we'll be really professional. How about that?
Okay. I'll believe that when I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. All kinds of things, I think. Last week, when we had Ivana join me for the midweek show, and then I put up a picture, because it was, all right, so I got to have a couple pictures to go with the show, so I put up a couple of Ivana's most recent finishes off of her site. Stole the photos, with permission, but stole them. Yeah, like Ivana would complain about you showing pictures of her finishing work.
Yeah, you know? And that piece particularly, that was it was beautifully photographed.
So anyway, yes, so this one that I showed, this flat fold that Ivana did, Music Gives My Soul Wings. And it's pretty neat, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, Ursula Michael of Imaginating is the designer. Well, I heard from Shirley Crockett, who, that was her piece that Ivana had finished for her. And I don't know if she actually had it in her hands when we showed the picture, but she wrote and said, hey, that's mine. And, you know, thanks for showing it. And because, yeah, she did a nice job. It was a beautiful piece all the way around.
Yeah, yeah. It really was.
Yep. So, yay for Shirley Crockett. And I forget, she gave me a story of who she stitched it for. It's going to be some gift. I'm not going to, even if I did have it written down, which I don't, because that would mean I'd be organized. But I think it was going to be a gift, so I wouldn't say anything anyway. But so then today, we're recording on Monday, so then today I'm putting together stuff for this show, and yeah, I ordered it. Yep.
Very nice.
On its way, yeah. It was, you know, $7 and $3 for postage, so I'll own that.
You'll have to attach little bells to it.
Yes. Well, I have to say, that was my first thought, was I would stitch one for each of the bell choir members. Mm-hmm. And then a little later, I had a sanity check. That would be, because that would be 12 of them.
Yeah, you'd by the end of it, you would start getting, that's when you do something like, because it's painted canvas, right?
No, it's on
Oh,
Ada.
Oh, it's counted?
Yeah, it's a chart.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to say, if it was painted canvas, that's one of the ones where you... We had talked to somebody very, very early on about how you don't have to stitch every square, and you can, you know, use very open weave patterns and things like that. So that's when you start getting into that, wow, I'm going to fill the background with this real open grid type stitch.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll see how long it takes to stitch one. And because it would be a nice year-end gift next year for the bell choir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it really is a beautiful piece. But, man, I by about the eighth one, it's like, oh, not again. This whole thing again. Shoot me. So maybe if I could find two musical things, that one and one more, then I would have, you know, variety.
Oh, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Just for your own sake.
Sanity, yes. So anyway, so that's beautiful. So yay, Shirley. That's going to look great. And, of course, we know Ivana's finishing is to perfection. And, yes, order it imaginating.com, Ursula Michaels, imaginating.com. Bought it right there, $7, $3 shipping. I'll have it for $10 in a couple of days. Yay. Good to go.
Excellent.
Another thing for the pile of things to stitch. Because it's just ridiculous. I really got to stop, because I also ran across Tammy Black of Scattered Seed Samplers posted in one of the reproduction sampler groups, Lydia Barnes Pigeon 1827. I bought it. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's really attractive. It's got a great border, two big flower pots, couple trees, has one of those heart deer with all the big antlers, a fence across the bottom, a little say, you know, I got a saying that's probably four more lines than I want to stitch one over one, but whatever.
Right, and, right.
I bought it. So I have that in my hot little hand right now. Now, the chances of me actually stitching that in the next 3 years are slim and none, but there it was. So
you're a collector.
I got to stop.
See, so that's it. So you have a shelf of projects that are to be done. I have a shelf of projects that I started like gangbusters, and then I'm like a crow. So I start something and I'm really excited about it and I love it. And it's not that I get bored with the piece that I'm working on at all. It's just that something else gets really, really exciting. And then I sadly put down the one that I'm working on to start this other one because there's some need to do so. So now I have a shelf of works in progress. So that's my whip shelf. And I've got probably three things on it and one that's sitting next to me. Yeah. And then every once in a while, my family will say, when are you going to finish anything? and I don't know the answer to that because I guess I'm just not a good fin.
When I get good and ready, that's when I'm finishing it. When I get good and ready.
Or the other thing that I'm getting now is, so you finished that thing. When are you going to frame it or put it into something so we can look at it? Because why do you do these things? Also a fair question.
When I get good and ready.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not alone. There's a million people out there that all have a whole bunch of things half stitched. Yep.
Yeah.
And some people couldn't care less if they ever finish one. It's just the stitching of, you know, it's the putting it together and the stitching of it. Yeah. But I started working on, I put the Serapar reproduction sampler away. I hit, I think I mentioned last week, but I hit one of those spots where, all right, it's all buttoned up right. This is a good stopping spot. So took it off the rack and folded it up, rolled it up. I kept it on the bars and put it in plastic and put it in a drawer and just going to take a break from it. And so then I started the back on the Anasazi song Needlepoint, which is just a beautiful piece. It's really beautiful. And there's four, you stitch this whole framework, and then there's four double fan doubles made with a light pink silk pearl. And it's really creative because it's framed in Krynek. Everything is framed in Krynek. The whole frame of the thing is cross stitches in Krynek braid, and everything has this Krynek to it. And then you create these four diamonds, two above and two below the center design. And you make a cross in the diamonds with this Krynek. And then you do the double fan doubles, but you don't do the last four stitches.
Okay.
And you end it off, and then you haul out your Krynek again, and you do the last four stitches as part of the double fan double. Very cool effect.
Yeah, that does sound neat, actually. Yes,
very cool. But you have to remember to stop before you do the final four stitches. Because you get going along, you know, or at least I do. And then I got all done, tied it all off. Oh, nuts.
Oh, I forgot.
And of course, it's tied off. And then to take it apart, I've cut off the length. Because you start with a 2.5 yard length of thread.
Right. Because you can't really patch it.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's fun in its own right, managing that much thread. But, yeah. And so then when you tie it off and cut it off, and then you pull those four stitches out. Well, there's really not enough. So I had to tear out the whole thing. First one, I had to tear out the whole thing and redo it, which was okay because I did a better job the second time. So
Yeah.
Not a terrible thing. I mean, I had better tension all the way around, so I was happier with it. But oh, I was really proud of myself this time, though, because this time, double fan doubles aren't something that you do every day.
I like them.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty, and I actually like sewing them.
Yeah, they're cool. And they're not tough at all. Once you figure out what to do, they're quite easy to do. But I was smart enough to practice. I just got out some number 12 pearl cotton, just ecru pearl cotton. I have several balls of that. And off on the side on the canvas, I practiced before I started.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty proud of myself for thinking to do that. And then, get a sense of the tension and everything before I started using pearl silk. So I was pretty proud of that, but then I had to tear out the pearl silk and throw it away anyway. So it was nice try, buddy. But it is cool. Yeah, they are really, it's a really neat stitch at any size. It's really neat. So, and then Marga, that looks great. We're going to get that framed. I know right where that's going to go. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, see, that's the difference. See, I've got somebody who says, all right, I'm going to get it framed and I know where it's going. All right, then here, take it. So.
Because that's a tough thing to get done. I like having different pieces going that are the different styles, right? So one embroidery piece and one needlepoint piece or one cross-stitch piece. Because I feel like they're so different and you like doing them for different reasons. So, like, I was doing surface embroidery kind of heavily for a while, and then I picked up a needlepoint piece. And after I did one big needlepoint piece, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with this. I'm really excited about surface embroidery. And then I got back into needlepoint, and then I kind of remembered why I liked it. So it's nice to kind of bounce back and forth because you don't get bored.
Right. Different kinds of challenges, too, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Very
different
much.
Fibers, different, even the way your eyes work is different. The way your hands work is different. It's just, different challenges, I think, is a good way to sum it up.
Oh, yeah, because, it's different threads, but it's also different thinking in terms of how you're going to stitch something, how the stitches are going to, what direction, how they're going to flow for the look, and, how you can do this one or that one. It's a different thing. And then, you go to, say, a reproduction sampler. Well, that's mm-hmm. just X's, but it's little motifs all over the place. So it's a different thinking. And you can have these little successes time after time after time. And, it kind of feeds different parts of the brain, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there's maybe one of the bigger challenges, differences in challenges, perhaps, is with the surface embroidery. It's more about the creative art side of it because it's judgments, right? You're making judgments all the time with different stitches of where am I going to place this to blend it with, if you're doing needle painting and, what kind of thread, what color am I going to choose if you're not going by a pattern that someone else has made already. And needlepoint, to me, it's all about technique. So how well can I execute this as far as tension and laying threads and doing all of those things to make it the best possible version of the thing I've been told to do, right?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one, you're coming up with something and making it the best version of what you have in your head that no one else has ever seen. So you're not matching a standard, but you have to kind of come up with something on your own. Whereas stitching up something that is a pattern already, that's a needlepoint, you have the sort of the relaxation of knowing that, all right, I know I'm going to be told what to do, but you have this the stress or the challenge of how well can I do this so that when it's done, I can show it to another needlepointer and have them say, that looks well done. Like the piece we were just talking about that Vanna had finished, what stood out to me was how neat it was. Immediately looking at it, just even from, like, if you glance at it for a second, it's so neatly done.
Yes.
That's what stands out about it. It's the finishing, but the piece itself, like, every stitch is just so even. And that's the challenge with that, right? So, I like kind of bouncing back and forth. between things like that.
Yeah, I think yeah. I do too. And but you know, you bring up a thing though, because you know people will say, well, yeah, but you never really get good at one or the other. You know that old thing where if you focus on one, you'll get really good at it. But I, you know, I don't know. I think you get better all the way around if
I
you're
think
jumping
so.
around. I think
I
you look at things differently and are more original with them. I don't know.
yes, I think that that's it. That's exactly correct. You're more original because you're thinking about things from different perspectives than, you know, if you're locked into one thing. Perhaps you don't get as good, like, I imagine that you would miss out on certain tips, right, or techniques of things, how to stop and start threads that you maybe wouldn't know, little things like that. But I mean, how many hours are we investing in this? And I think there's a plateau that you reach where you hit the best you can be, and you always improve, right? You can take on bigger and better pieces, and you're always going to learn a little thing here or there. But I think that more so with needlepoint for me, this is, and I can't generalize to everyone. Unless you're trying new stitches, there's going to be a point where you kind of reach a, this is, I know what to do here. And your challenge and where you feel growth is by picking up different types of pieces and trying new stitches. But there's not something where if you haven't taken a class or done a lot of pieces, you're going to not do it well, right? If you've done enough of them, you know the next one you're going to be able to do well. You don't feel like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. Does that make
Yes.
sense?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, you, the
So,
fear factor goes away. Yeah. Okay.
right. And
Yeah.
then it just becomes a joy because you know that whatever stitch it is that are being, you know, the double fan doubles, you know, it's thrown at you and you know you can do them because you've stitched, you know, 47 other stitches. So once you get to 48, you know, all right, pretty much from here on in, I know whatever is thrown at me, I'm going to be able to do it.
Yeah, 'cause
And then,
it's just a different manipulation. Yeah, there's yeah.
right. It's variations on a theme.
Yeah.
So, and perhaps maybe with surface embroidery, do you get, or like hard on irons, things like that, do you get better at it? That I could see that, you know, your hand gets better. You develop a finer eye and a finer hand. That I think maybe takes longer to get to a point where you are very, very good at it.
Yeah,
I
especially surface embroidery when you look at how free form that really is.
Yes.
Even if you have a pattern on the linen, there's still a real free form element to it. And to be able to do it at the Mary Corbett level,
Exactly. And that's
that's,
exactly who I was thinking of,
yeah.
right? So you look at the difference between a beginner needlepoint piece and a, you know, very competently executed expert piece. There's, you know, let's say from A to M difference of what, you know, how well it's done. And then you look at a surface embroidery from somebody that's their first piece to a Mary Corbett, and it's like A to triple X because, you know, it's just
Yeah.
leaps and bounds of, you know, skill. So there, you know, could you get better faster if you didn't do some needlepoint? Sure. Would you enjoy it as much? Maybe not, because maybe you need a little bit of break to stay interested. You know, maybe it would get boring if you didn't jump off every once in a while and do something else. You know, or maybe doing needlepoint spurs an idea that you wouldn't think of otherwise. So, you know, what's the trade-off? What's the rush?
Right.
Are you in a rush to learn? Like, if you learn and you reach a certain level of expertise 4 months earlier. Unless you're training to be a teacher or a judge or something like that, what's your hurry?
Yeah.
I don't
We
know.
got to keep this is topic number one when we have Mary Corbett back. We got to talk to her about that 'cause and actually I've had she is coming back here soon. I had exchange with her, so she'll be joining us soon. Matter of fact, I think we almost set a date, and then I think I forgot. So, but you know, that'd be interesting to hear from her. Just because she does a lot of surface embroidery, but she also does a lot of other things. And
yes.
You know, do those things give her a mental break or a technique break? Or, you know, does she feel that they stretch her a little bit, you know, and when she goes back, she's a little better. Be interesting to hear what she has to say about that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cause she doesn't lock in. She doesn't, I mean, obviously she does a ton of surface embroidery, but she doesn't lock in on that.
No. But you know, you look at, there was an article that she had written a while back, and I'm going to do this from memory, so it's going to maybe not be the greatest thing, and I don't have the reference. She was comparing two different pieces, and they were both renditions. I think they were Jesus, and I think they were on, again, they were on some sort of ecclesiastical garment. And she was comparing sort of the skill level of the two things. And, you know, you look at the two of them and you can see, oh, okay, well, this one was done by someone who was vastly more experienced than the other. And that there, it was very clear. And it was a really great article. So I think it's definitely worth finding. Maybe I'll try to find it afterwards and we'll do a link. But there's more to it than just, you know, this is really well done because the stitches are flat and everything. It was a lot more the way you would analyze a painting. Because it was how well are the is the skin shading rendered? How much does the face look like a face? You know,
that's
where the art comes in. Like how well can you, you know, draw a face or paint a face? And basically, you're painting with threads at that point. And so she did this whole comparison, and it really wasn't. She was very careful not to say that this is better or worse. It was just different. You know, one was intended to be more rough, I guess. And again, I've read this a while ago, so I'm doing this completely off the top of my head. But it's really worth reading because looking at the differences of these two pieces and, you know, how they're different was very interesting. So, yeah, I think that's... It was very interesting to read.
Yeah, that is an interesting article. I remember that that article quite clearly. Yeah, it was two very different approaches to effectively the same piece of ecclesiastical garb or a piece of art, but very different in the approach. And yeah, her analysis is, of course, she's really good at that ecclesiastical stuff anyway, and her analysis and showing the differences. Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Noted right here, Mary Corbett on the show coming up. Got it. We have questions for Mary. Yes. So, let's see. Oh, we should talk about the Sarah Brazier stitch along. I cannot believe. I'm excited, but I am 660 plus members as of today.
I know.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And we've created a global shortage of linen and silk. Quite proud of that. And so we moved the official start date to July 11. So another month. And of course, another month for all of us who do not have silk and linen to stitch with. And then we get to watch all the people who do have thread and linen.
Right. Who are cruising through the piece and feel very jealous that this is happening.
And what was one of them? I can't put this down. I can't quit. Stop stitching. Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. And I mean, the colors are spectacular. And the DMC floss, I'll tell you.
You're regretting it, aren't you? You're going to regret it.
I tell you that those colors in the DMC floss are so rich. Oh, every time I look at it, I'm still hanging in there. I mean, Jean Lee did that magic silk dust thing on me. And so, you know, whatever it is she has, I'm not sure what it is she has, but it's effective. So we have that. And so I'm sticking with the silk, but the people who have chosen to do DMC may just well have made the best choice.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. There's still time. And I'm at this point trying to, I'm kind of working on doodle cloth, not even, it's not even the actual fabric. I just got my linen, and the only reason I got it was because I told the retailer, just send me whatever color you have, because I'm gonna dye it anyway. They said, are you sure? That doesn't really, and I said, nope, just send me anything. So I had that, because be up until now, I just wanted to kind of get a feel for what the DMC blended with the blending filaments was going to look like. And so, and I'm stitching on it's the wrong thread count and it's not even close. So I just kind of wanted to get a feel for that. I have some pictures just looking at, satin stitch and a couple of X's just to see which blending filament colors I would like to use, how well they blend with the colors that are the specified colors. Seeing whether or not, because you could choose something that's very, very close, or you could choose something that's very different. So, and blending filament, what I'm finding is, I'm not laying them, I'm not laying the threads, which is intentional because I want them to be sort of random. It's not, unless you use just blending filament, it's very subtle, very, very subtle. And there's a regular and there's a high luster. And if you don't use the high luster, it's almost imperceptible. It's just a hint of a little bit of sparkle, and that's it. And I'm kind of really liking it because I think in some areas I'm going to go full metallic. Like I may use like a number four Krynek for the border and maybe a couple of other elements. But for the rest of it, I may end up using the blending filament a lot more than I intended because it's so subtle that it just kind of adds a little kind of a zhuzh, It just adds a little sparkle. It just enhances the thread that's there. So yeah, it's kind of neat. So on one hand, I'm thinking, at first when I started, I thought, oh, I was kind of hoping that this would be really like brilliantly metallic, like a lot of the Krynex are when you use them, like a cord. But then I started thinking about it differently. I'm like, well, if I use this throughout the piece, though, I could really blend it everywhere, and then the entire thing would kind of have a little bit of texture to it. The one thing I will say, though, is I hope, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about this until it starts coming together. Because you're using it and you're not laying threads, it ends up kind of twisty. So the blending filament is not, it twists on itself and it's flat. It's like a very, very small, narrow, flat ribbon, if you can imagine that, if you haven't worked with it. So it catches light differently, and that's intentional. What I am afraid of is that midway through, I'm going to look at this and say, this looks messy. Like the stitches look messy. That's the only thing I'm concerned about. And it, but I'm wondering if that is just an artifact of me stitching it on the wrong fabric because I'm stitching it on, very large Congress cloth that I just had laying around just because I was anxious to start something, and didn't want to wait, So that's just kind of where I am with this whole thought process of doing this weird way. So we'll see what happens.
Well, and I'm confident you'll get a much different look on linen.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
What count of linen?
36.
36. I'm most interested in how your dyeing goes.
Everybody's really concerned about that.
What color of linen did they ship you?
So they shipped like a pearl gray.
Well,
And I
that's
really
pretty
don't.
neutral then.
Yeah, it's a neutral color. No matter what no matter what it wasn't going to matter because the dye that I'm using is a very dark cobalt blue. So not a navy, which is more of a gray blue, but a cobalt blue, but dark, right? So not a royal blue, but a cobalt blue. And I'm not really that concerned because the dye, I'm not using a Rit dye or any of the like a craft dyes. I'm using a dye that a costume designer would use. So it is intended to be very, very, very permanent and very deep. And you pre-treat the fabric. You know, I've read the instructions and I've read forums extensively about, you know, exactly how you go about doing this to make sure you wash out any sizing, any fabric softeners, any of those things to prepare the fiber for the chemical reaction that's actually going to take place. And then you combine it with washing soda and you use the dye and at the right temperatures, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's going to be fine. I'm not really worried about that. I'm actually looking forward to seeing what color, you know, how the color manifests
Yeah, well,
when it's done.
and I'm curious about that. And that the reason I wondered what color you were dyeing on is that when in the magazine business, the artist we used to use before, who was with us before, the one we have, whenever we did a solid black on paper, solid black ink on paper rarely looks
Is
good.
never black.
It's
Well, because black is not black. So this
right.
is one thing I learned from doing cosmetics, is that colors are rarely what they are, right? So black is not black. It's usually purple or green, right? Or it's a blend of things. Blue can be blue, but sometimes it's not. So yeah, things aren't as easy as that. Yeah, it's exactly what you just said. It
Right,
doesn't
yeah.
look good
It never
because you
prints
never
good,
get a
yeah.
rich.
No. And so what she would do is she would put 5% blue in. So it would be solid black and 5% blue. And the difference that 5% made was huge because then it became a rich black. Because the blue didn't really show, but the black became rich. And the visual effect on paper was very good. So I'm curious. With a gray base, what you know if the dye completely covers it or if it benefits from it. It'd be interesting.
I suspect that it will dye over it completely. But what I can do to satisfy your curiosity, I have some other fiber around that's sort of a neutral, like the normal natural color. I'll grab a little swatch of that and I'll dye it in the same batch, and we'll look at them together and see if they're different.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah.
So here's one thing that I am a little not worried about, but something I think is worth looking at. So I'm stitching a piece on black canvas now, the needlepoint canvas. And what I'm finding with that, because the piece is kind of taking a little bit of a beating because I've moved around with it a lot, and you know, it's not in one place, and I keep moving it from room to room. So what I'm noting on the black canvas is that the black sort of wears a little bit.
Oh.
So that it almost feels like wherever, like if you get to a point where it rubs on something, the color kind of washes out a little bit. So that's something I'm going to pay attention to, and that's something I can also experiment with on a piece of cloth, you know, not part of the piece, is once it's dyed, you know, especially when you hold it taut, you can rub the fabric. I'm curious to see whether the dye is mechanically color fast. I'm not worried about washable, whether it's going to wash out, because the way that the dye is set up, it's chemically bonded to the fibers. But I'm wondering whether it's going to rub out or not. So that'll be
Yeah,
interesting.
because I mean you know this far more than I do, but dyeing a canvas of any kind shouldn't that dye be making a chemical link with the fiber?
Yes,
So
it should, and
it
that's
shouldn't just
why,
rub
yeah.
off. Yeah.
No, and it's not rubbing off to the point where it's gone. I think maybe it's just the fiber. It's not that let me see if I can explain it. I don't think that the fibers themselves are, that the dye is rubbing off. What I think is happening is that the fibers are becoming softer and frayed, and so it
Oh.
looks like it's lighter. Does that make sense? So if
Yeah,
you have a
yeah.
piece of thread, like think about like a pair of blue jeans. When you can rub it, and you know, you can wash a pair of blue jeans, and if you wash it a whole bunch of times, they'll get lighter everywhere. But if you get to like the knees or any place where they rub a lot, those fibers, the threads start to fray a little bit and they start to pop up and they get lighter in those spots. And I think it's that. I'm totally guessing on this. I don't have any justification for this at all. This is a complete hypothesis. But I think that it's just that the fibers themselves are getting kind of worn a little bit, and so they're popping up and they're looking a little bit lighter than they would if it was completely flat.
Because see, I would expect that the dye would impregnate the fiber all the way through.
It does. It does. And that's not what's happening. It's a visual trick. So I'm
Okay.
imagining it like, so here, I'm going to explain it. So this is what I know. I know hair, right? Because this is my job. Hair, a hair strand, and I imagine the fiber is similar, but I'm guessing. A hair strand, if you imagine a pine cone, so you know what a pine cone looks like, where all the little
Right.
pieces
Right.
lay down flat over each other, right? So a pine cone, when it's closed, is very dark and shiny. And when it opens up, it gets a little duller and it doesn't reflect light as well. So that's what happens. So with hair, when hair is new, so young people or hair that's freshly grown and undyed, tends to be shinier and darker because hair is exactly like a pine cone on the outside. It has what's called a cuticle, and it's layers of protein that lay down flat. And when they do that, they reflect light very, very well, and so they're very shiny and they can be very dark. When you dye your hair or when it gets very long and it just gets worn, if you fray hair from like mechanical damage from brushing too much. When I used to ride my motorcycle, I would notice it then. What ends up happening is the cuticle pops up like a pine cone. And so what happens is hair looks dull. And the reason for that is that it doesn't reflect light. So what's happening is it's not that the hair is a different color, it's just that it reflects light differently. So it looks lighter and it looks duller, right? It doesn't look as shiny and it doesn't look as rich. The color isn't as rich. So no color has changed. It's just the way that light interacts with the hair and bounces back to your eye has changed. That's what I think is going on.
Okay, well then that makes perfect sense, because now I'm thinking, that happens to thread, say effectively
Right.
the same thing. So yeah, so that makes perfect sense.
Right.
Yes.
So instead of light bouncing off all of the waves bouncing off in one direction and coming back to your eye, if the fiber is frayed, the light is going to kind of bounce off in all different directions and it's going to look dull. That's kind of what I feel like is happening, but again, that's a hypothesis. So I
Well,
would love to
it
just
makes
take some
sense.
and put it,
Yeah, it makes
yeah.
sense, because that's any thread, if you get down toward the end, especially if you haven't used a big enough needle, it loses its luster and
Exactly.
yeah.
And it starts looking a little dull and not as rich.
Right.
So I think that'd be fun to like put it under a microscope and take some of this canvas where it looks a little lighter and see if it's just frayed the same way that a hair would. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud about whether that's true.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I am most curious about your dying thing.
Well, I'm going to take pictures throughout, so I'll have lots and lots of pictures to show
Yes.
of the can not the canvas, the linen before, the process, the linen after, and it's going to get washed many times before I actually start stitching on it, because the last thing I want is for the dye
Ooh.
to bleed,
Ooh,
because
yeah, not good. Not
that
good.
would be tragic. So we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen, and if I need to dye it again, I will do that. I'm gonna work this until it's where I need it to be.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's you definitely don't want that happening. Oh, that'd just ruin everything. That would not be good. Yep. One of the things I wanted to point out that people have been talking about is people who are using Q snaps were concerned about clamping Q snaps over the satin bands. And I did this with that stocking that I did, cutting strips of felt and putting it between the stitched piece and the Q snap clamp. And everyone is reporting that the satin stitched portion is unfazed if you do that. Just cover up. And I had that same effect. I had to move it on that stocking, which was really dense, three thread over two cross stitch. And I cut pieces of felt and just put it in between. And when I took the clamps off of the Q snaps, it was like nothing was there. Nothing had been clamped down. It was fine. So, yeah. And people are
I'm
using
curious.
people are
Q
using white
snaps.
felt. Yeah.
I was worried because I was considering using a hoop because it's just such a large piece. It would be easier to manage just having a hoop and moving it around. But I was worried about distortion and the same thing, basically, that it's going to, get crushed or damaged, or distorted in some way. So if it's working for Q snaps, I think it'll work. And they always say, if you're going to use a hoop to take it out of the hoop, when you're going to put it down, I'm very lazy and I don't know that I would do that every night. So that's concerning to me. I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. So I'm still
Yeah.
toying around with the idea.
See, when I did Q snaps, I didn't take them out of the Q snaps every time I got done. I just left it in. And that stocking was over several months. And it was just clamped down with the felt. And I just got Jo-Ann Fabric just went and got those sheets of felt. It was nothing special. And just cut it into strips that were wide enough to wrap around. And I never had any trouble with it at all. When I took the clamps off, it just popped out of there. It was just fine. So I don't, yeah, I don't, I wouldn't worry about that all that much. And I would think for something of this size that Q snaps, number one, would give you tension all the way around, maybe better tension than with a hoop. Of course, if you wrap the hoop, you get it pretty tight. But a bigger stitching area. And easier to rest on something, I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
I have a big quilting hoop, so and I've
Oh.
ever since I started wrapping my hoops with twill tape, there's no problem with tension at all.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing
Really
when
not
they
an
do that. Yeah,
issue.
that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a gigantic difference. So I don't know. Again, this is all experimentation for me, and that I don't I'm not tied to having the piece be perfect. This is the piece for me is meant to be a little bit of an experimenting and piece to try out a bunch of things and learn. So, if it gets a little kind of damaged along the way because I did something to learn and share that, then so be it. I'm fine with that.
Yep. No, it's what I've enjoyed since I can't stitch the chart since it's here. What I have enjoyed is watching in the group all the different linens that people are going to use, and then watching how people who are showing what they're doing, how they're going about stitching it.
Yes, everyone gets to the same place a different way.
Right. That's fun. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, this is great. I'm looking forward to it continuing. And someday
Indeed.
maybe actually have my own.
Taking a stitch.
So cool would that be? Yes. All right, that's gonna be it. Vanna on Sunday, the Twisted Stitcher. We found a whole hour because we did those two. The Wednesday one was just a hey, Vanna, let's do this. So we did 2 hours. It was like a 3 minute break in between. So it was 2 hours of talking about stitching and things, and we were able to find different things throughout the 2 hours to talk about. So if you listened last Wednesday, then this Sunday will be very different. Yeah, it was on and on, and I think we could have gone another hour, but yeah.
It always is that way.
Yes. Yeah, she's fantastic. You can talk about stitching all day long with her. Yep. Yep. So that'll be Sunday. Vana will be with us, and we'll be back next Wednesday.
Yes, we will.